B-Pod Studios.
Final hour, Felger and Naz here on a re-entry Monday. Brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook, both on 98.5 The Sports Hub and simulcast on NBC Sports Boston. If you're watching the simulcast, you'll hear Murray's top of the hour update. So he just read a doozy of an update from Patriots training camp. It's a doozy, but it sounds familiar. Really could have been from any day so far down there.
Yep.
Give it to us again, Murray. Who are you reading from here?
Mark Daniels, blue check mark, covering the Patriots for the Providence Journal.
Are they in pads today?
It looks like they are, yeah, from some of the photos that I've seen. Yeah, this is a padded practice.
Yeah, okay. I thought they were back in pads today.
Okay,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Starting offense in first 11 on 11s. False start, Trent Brown. Run stuff. Incompletion. Sack. Hospital ball to Thornton. Pass breakup, Marcus Jones. Sack. Hospital ball to Nelson Agholor. Run stuff. Screen pass to Jacoby Myers. Not good. The Patriots defense was all over them.
Again, more of the same. So he gives them 2 days off. They come back and it's the same thing.
Correct.
Yeah, go marinate on your sucking for a couple of days and come back and suck on Monday in the heat.
I mean, that might be more worrisome than anything. I mean, again, you take what you think is a reset. You come back out on the field and it's the same crap. Like, it's scary. And now I'm starting to put stock into this whole thing of, and I say, not that I didn't before, they don't have the right players to run it. That, you know, which again speaks to some sort of disconnect in Bill's head. So you were going to change the offense, but you didn't build the roster to do it? Or you built only part of the roster? Like maybe you adjusted the skill positions, you brought in someone like Tyquan Thornton for speed or whatever else, a space player, like the idea to take the shot down the field if you get the defense to commit on a stretch play, whatever. But now you don't have the offensive line that can block it? So what difference does it make? You're going to get completely blown up?
I know you just read this, but I just want to do it again. Greg Bedard, his tweet, arguably worst start of offense to training camp. Arguably worst start of offense to camp. I think it's a typo. He meant to say worst start of offense of camp, from camp, whatever. What he's trying to say is that this might have been the worst day they actually ever had. And he did something, so just because it's fun to read, I'm just going to do it again. He also gave you the play-by-play.
Yeah, let's do it.
Or the first 12 plays or so. Ready?
Yep. Run stuff, false start.
Here we go. False start, 77, stuff, incomplete, stuff at handoff, sack, flat 1 yard would have been, don't know what that means, flat 1 yard gain is would have been, blown up if live, incomplete, sack on waggle, 1 yard pass, blown up by Wilson, stuff, 5 yard flat to Myers. Did they do anything right?
Fourth and eight?
I think after the false start on 77, stuff incomplete, stuff at handoff, then you get a punt.
All right, because you take the five, it's first and 15.
Next
so
series.
So you're punting on fourth and 13. Okay, go ahead.
Sack, 1 yard flat pass, it would have gone for 1 yard gain.
Okay.
Blown up if live. Punt.
Punt.
Next series, incomplete, sack on a waggle.
Okay, third and 13.
1 yard pass, blown up by Wilson.
Fourth and 12, punt.
Punt. Come out the next series, stuff 5 yard flat to Myers. And then then mercifully the quarter ended, and that was it.
Okay, so you're third and seven. Right, because you probably get lost two on the stuff. Got five to Myers, get you to third and seven, and then it's a sack.
I mean, how much longer are you going to stick with this?
Yeah, keep going.
Well, no,
you gotta ride it out, Mike.
That's it.
Keep going. You gotta stick this out. Bumps, transitions.
So Bill was actually asked about this, and he sounded kind of open. And they talked in generalities, but Bill sounded more open to change than you might think. Jimmy, this is number five, I believe. It's the fifth cut. I think Phil Perry asked him in general about how long you stick with things. And listen to this exchange. Go ahead, Jimmy.
How you envision your team's identity, either offensively or defensively. How do you balance having patience with new things that you might be doing versus saying, okay, maybe we need to shift gears here? Again, I know it's early in camp, but is there a point even in camp where you would say this isn't looking the way we want? You might have to do something else.
In camp, in preseason, during the season, midseason, yeah. I think you see things that are going well, you try to figure out a way to maybe exploit that more or do more of it. You see things that aren't going well and either figure out a way to improve it or get rid of it and move on to something else that's more productive. You know, so you can, you have a couple different options there. You just have to decide which one you feel is the right one for that. But if you're doing, you're spending time on something that's not productive, then, you know, either you need to change it or find something else. It's just not efficient.
How difficult is it to make a change knowing you've spent a lot of time on something?
Well, I think that's, you know, part of it. You know, like, everything's not going to work out perfectly. And again, we have a lot of, in certain positions, you know, we have a number of new players, and we'll have to see how they adapt and kind of find out what, you know, what things they're good at and what things, you know, maybe we need to do less of, what things we need to do more of. And so I think we're finding that out, certainly with the rookies and younger players, but also some other players we've added to the team. And, you know, that's a process. Sometimes it takes a while, but ultimately you have to make that judgment, and sometimes you make it sooner rather than later. But, you know, it's not really worried too much about all that right now. I mean, we have a lot of balls in the air. We're trying to get ready for the Giants game. We're trying to evaluate players. We're trying to, you know, work against each other so we can get high-quality work rather than just, you know, running plays from another team. So, you know, there's a lot of things going on there that are, you know, all come together, you know, in some kind of jigsaw puzzle. It's not just one thing.
So you think he sounded open to change there, Mass?
Yeah, but I don't think he's there yet. I mean, it feels to me like he's saying, I'm not worried about it right now. Let's see how this thing goes over a little longer. You know, this is a little bit of a tricky week. Can we get a game in a few days? And so, you know, but at some point, yeah, you got to make a call. Like, but I don't think it sounds to me like he's not there yet. He's not there yet. No, you know, but, you know, Bill's smart. He's not necessarily going to tip his hand all the time either. But what do you think? I mean, to me, it feels like he's not quite there in terms of pulling the plug.
Well, no, I think he's saying the words, because that's what I think he is good at adjusting, and he is good at, if something isn't working, pulling the plug and coming up with plan B. I think he's done that his whole time here. So that's what I think he'll do here, and I think that's what he's saying in that comment. I think that's what, yeah. But then they go out to practice and do the same old crap and don't leak a drop. So I don't know. I think he's talking the talk, and I do think he's going to scrap this thing if it's not working. He's not just going to stick with it to stick with it. He's not going to do that. That's not what I've known of him in the past anyway. And so that I do think is coming, but it wasn't any different today. Looked like it was another bag of suck from that offense. So it's amazing.
I mean, those list of plays, that's not exactly the Bill Walsh script in the first 25, is it?
I know.
Like with Joe or what's his name, Andy Reid? Like, you know, scripting those first, you know, whatever, 10 plays, 15 plays? I mean, that is like run stuff, sack, penalty, sack, hospital ball. Like, it is. It's one disaster after the next.
Day after day.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
Oh, I mean, but at this point, I can't wait to see the preseason game.
Right.
See how bad this is.
I mean, they can't block. I would hope that in the preseason game, they're running different plays. Like, if they try to run this against an opponent, someone's liable to get hurt.
Let's see. Well, not that I want that, but if I'd like to see the full carnage on display now. After all the horror stories we've heard, now I have to see this. All right, so there's your Patriots update. Your calls right after this.
Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
This is the place Boston sports fans come to get some positive vibes for their teams.
Anything but. It's time to panic.
Maybe not. Now, back to reality with Felger and Maz.
they've asked us this thing the whole time. From offseason, I watched them do the drills, and they're bringing out the angle things, and I'm like, yeah, this is what you do to get ready for it. They haven't repped it enough. They practiced 2 days in pads last week, and then take it off and get in shorts on the third day. Like it's Club Med or something like that. And then, God forbid, they practice on consecutive days this weekend. They had Saturday off. They take Sunday off. Now they're not practicing till 3 p.m. on Sunday, like Bill needed a three-day weekend. Like, no, they don't have enough practice time to get it ready. They don't. And so you have to make a change. They can go back to their old offense very quickly. They don't have the coaches to install it. They don't have the players on the offensive line to run it. They're not getting enough reps in practice. They have to abort. They're going to have to abort at some point.
If you've been around football as long as we have, the schedule is unusual. And it's just, when we went out there Wednesday, we were expecting a third day of padded practice. He was in, not only were they in shorts, but it was non-competitive. All right, look, the game that they had, the scrimmage they had in the stadium on Friday for the fans, okay, that they were in full pads. That's usually a scrimmage. It was a walkthrough tempo, I heard. And then they had the last 2 days off. So the first 12 days of training camp, in the last 7 days, they've had 4 days of non-competitive practices, 4 out of the last 7 days. That's valuable time that you're missing by not going harder than they are. And so, to me, maybe it's a reset. It's Bill feels like, you know what, we got to give these guys time. They're not fresh. They're not focused. And so he feels like he needs to give them the extra time so that when they do get out there, it's a more crisp practice. That's the only thing I can come up with, Greg.
What do you think?
It's absurd. I mean, it's absurd to start padded practices on Monday, go Monday and Tuesday, and then they're in shorts on Wednesday, and then you're in pads again. Every other camp, anytime you do it, 4 straight days of pads, then you go into the stadium practice, take it easy, day off on Saturday, you're back on Sunday. The Patriots can't even do that. So I have no idea what they're doing. If they had a veteran team where everybody, it's all the same scheme and Tom Brady's out there and, you know, they don't really need anything, okay, fine. You need to rep this blocking scheme to get it to work. You can't just think about it.
Yeah.
You actually have to do it and get angles and react. How's this going to work? How's this? I don't get it.
The practices have been so bad and so spotty. Bedard's outraged. He's outraged. True outrage in his voice.
Yes. No, he's insulted.
And what he was saying came to fruition today, right? Like, you need the reps. You can't have a couple of days off, go think about it, you know, make sure you know the plays, and then come back, and then we'll run it again on Monday. No, you've got to go out there and do it, because otherwise it won't work.
Word is that they were awful today at practice again. Awful. So we'll see.
And again, you know, like, it's not like Bill's disputing any of that. You know what I mean? Like, you know, usually if something's being characterized one way that he's deemed fair, they'll spin it, they'll do, they're doing none of that. It's almost like, yeah, we suck right now.
Yep. Okay. There's your Patriots update, your thoughts on this, and whatever else you want. I have a giveaway coming for you, by the way, in about 15, 20 minutes. I got something for free for you because I know you like free stuff. So in about 15 minutes, a free giveaway for our friends at Core Golf. So stay tuned to your radio if you want that. Back to your phone. So here's Kevin in Mendon. Go ahead, Kevin.
All right. So this is about Matt Patricia. You know, he's coaching the offense, supposedly calling the offensive plays. And it's basically about Mac Jones. He showed us last year that he was, he was the NFL-ready quarterback to go, and he was drafted at number 5, and he grasped that complex Josh McDaniels offense and made the Pro Bowl in the playoffs. And I just think that having Matt Patricia show him read through his eyes the defense of opposing teams is a plus. And, there's a lot of disrespect going towards Matt, but I think that's a good thing going on here.
Okay, I don't.
How come more teams don't do it then?
I mean, I'd be fine if you had a real offensive coordinator, a real offensive mind, even a Shanahan guy or a McVay guy that Bill wants to switch to, no problem. And Patricia's coaching the defense, and every once in a while he walks across the hall and says, Mac, this is what I'm seeing from my side. If you find this valuable, just so you know, when I look at you on tape, this is what I see. No, I have no problem with that. I would assume that happens a lot, and there probably is some value to that. But to have no offensive coaches with any experience and have the defensive guy responsible for that? Oh, please. If it's so valuable, then as Maz just said, how come teams aren't doing this left, right, and center?
Because it doesn't work. That's why. So, again, the scenario that you just described, that is logical to me. I mean, I'd be willing to bet that happens pretty regularly. You know, when I say pretty regularly, like a quarterback's having some trouble, the guy on the defensive side comes over and says, well, listen, this is what we notice. Okay, thanks. All right. It's like, again, you know, I think there is value in that, not full time.
Dave and Lynn, what do you got, Dave?
Yeah, you get more value out of having meetings between the offensive and the defensive coaching staffs to pick their brains. But what they're doing with the musical chairs with the coaching staff is not only does it impede the development of Mac Jones, it impedes the development of every other player on the field because there's no continuity, there's no scheme. You don't even have your coaches develop yet. How can you put in a program or a scheme for player development? It's all backwards. It's not even the cart before the horse. You haven't even come up with the cart or the horse in this case. I don't know. It's crazy. That's all I
think. Okay. We'll see just how bad it is on Thursday. With well,
can I give you some new tweets?
I'm sorry. Go.
Oh, please.
Yeah,
please.
I
mean,
these just keep getting better. Mark Daniels, latest, a minute. Patriots offensive line has been really bad in 11 versus 11s. Multiple sacks, run stuffs, and pressures that force quick throws or ruin plays. It's not good right now. Mike Reese, again. Mike Reese. A thought after watching the Patriots offense look efficient in 7-on-7, but struggle notably in multiple 11-on-11s. Might be time to give Dante Scarnecchia a call for an independent evaluation. That's Mike Reese saying that.
Their biggest issue has been up front, apparently, that they can't. Half these plays are blown up because
they can't block.
Can't block it.
Hmm. Well, that's trouble.
That's why, you know, it's neat that you're good 7-on-7. If the NFL went to 7-on-7.
No, playing flag.
It's 11-on-11 is the problem.
Look, I have always felt nothing will take you down faster than a bad offensive line. It will take you down.
Phil Perry. Patriots defense is running roughshod over the offense. Highlights for that side were sacks by Christian Barmore and Matthew Judon during a third down period. Offense looks broken. Can't protect. Losing one-on-ones. Blitzes getting through. No run game. Miscommunication on routes.
Jesus. Read that one again. Hold on.
The last part.
No, just pick up offense looks broken from there.
Offense looks broken.
Yeah.
Can't protect.
Not good.
Losing one-on-ones.
Uh-oh.
Blitz is getting through.
Horrible.
No run game.
Uh-oh.
Miscommunication on routes.
Yikes.
Wow.
Is there anything they did well?
Dude, I mean, seriously, it's 2 weeks in. Offense looks broken. Offense looks broken. It's like it's going in the other direction.
Right.
Hold on. One more time, Murray. Do it again.
Offense looks broken.
Okay, got that part.
Can't protect.
Can't block.
Losing one-on-ones.
Getting smoked up front.
Blitz is getting through.
Yep, Cam, nobody's picking up the blocks.
No run game.
Yep, can't hand off.
Miscommunication on routes.
Can't pass. Got it.
Meanwhile, we have the Red Sox, Johnny in Brooklyn. Go ahead, Johnny.
Wow. Yeah, thanks so much. You got Bulk and Skull over there trying to teach a brand-new offense. It's incredible. But on the Red Sox and Chaim Bloom, you know, I can understand the nerds not understanding the human element and what could be the consequences of trading their starting catcher, but don't they have something in the algorithm that speaks to the importance of having an outfielder that could, I don't know, catch a fly ball? What's going on over there? Thanks, guys.
I mean, seriously.
No, overrated. No, again, the math shows you don't need outfield defense.
Why are they so horned up to put that kid in center field?
I have no idea. Again, the only answer I can come up with is that they feel like they are somehow developing him and making him a better player. I can't give you the right answer. I was looking this up a minute ago because Sean McAdam had this in his story. Durant's only played 300 innings in center field. Okay, only 300 innings, which is, you know, low relative to other fielders. And yet he is 32nd out of 37 in defensive runs saved, which is a volume stat.
Yeah.
So in other words, he's already a -7.
Oh my God.
In 300 innings, to give you an idea, there's a guy -8 who's played 706 innings. So if you double his innings and put him on he's like a -12. He is by far and away the worst defensive outfielder in the big leagues.
I don't care.
Or center fielder.
He was a second baseman, right?
Correct. 4 years ago.
Don't they need second baseman?
Sure, you would think, but he must not have been good at that or they wouldn't have moved him.
Tom and Quincy, go ahead.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Hey, you know, I'm kind of getting sick and tired of making the same phone call every, you know, other day at this point. It's bad enough when you suck against the teams that can actually play, but when you're getting your ass handed to you by the effing Royals, like in embarrassing fashion, with guys that are on this team playing professional level baseball that simply can't catch, can't hit, can't field anywhere. All he can do is run. You can find anybody that can just effing run. That's all Duran can do is run. Run. Run to the spot where the ball is, dude. You don't do that. All you can do is run if you make contact, which you never, ever do. How is...
Stop him there.
He's starting to lose it.
Yeah, no, he's starting to crack.
Ron in Wakefield. Go ahead, Ron.
Hi, guys. I love you guys. You're doing a great job. I know it in regards to Duran and Bradley, it's like talking about third stringers. However, I think we knew we were in trouble when you get a guy who comes from the Padres, who we gave to the Padres, and we get him back with a 163 average batting average. The only thing
so you're talking Bradley and the Brewers, I think, is what he was referring to.
Okay,
would be my guess. As horrible as that trade was, as useless as Jackie Bradley has been, you mentioned it earlier, it would make more sense for them to send Duran down and play Bradley in center field.
Correct.
Because they're hitting the same. They both can't hit the broadside of a barn, but at least Bradley's going to catch it.
Right. You're gonna look less ugly with Bradley on the field.
Yeah.
And not just look. You will be fundamentally more sound with Bradley on the field. So, again, this one, I just feel like this one to me is confusing. So you keep the young guy who needs to develop over the older guy who can play mistake-free. And then if you get into the later innings, you don't want to hit for Bradley, go ahead. But in the interim, he'll catch what he's supposed to catch and then some. Right? So as much as we've mocked Jackie Bradley and said his defense is overrated, we've never said defensively he sucks. He's good defensively. We know that. And so you bring in Hosmer, you bring in Pham, but then you release Bradley to play Jaron Duran in center? That just doesn't sync. It doesn't line up. It makes no sense to me. And so I wonder what the whole thing was with Bradley. Like, did they look at it and say, you know, if he's around, Cora's going to want to play him in center field, and Bloom didn't want that, so they just released him. And they, you know, I sort of envision that scene in Moneyball where, you know, Brad Pitt, Billy Bean, trades away Carlos Pena because he doesn't want to play first base anymore. Right, so he trades his ass and ships him out of town, and then Art Howe, the manager, doesn't have any choice. Now you got to play Hatterberg at first base, okay? And you know Billy Bean ends up being right, but the lack of value being placed on defense at some of the more critical spots on the field,
center field, man.
Yeah, you can't have a hack out there. You can't have a hack at first base. You know there are certain spots where you don't need elite defenders. Okay, but you can't have hacks in those spots. And they've had hacks. I mean, it blows you away.
Okay, I got a giveaway for you coming your way right after Big Jim Murray gets you updated, so don't leave your radio.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
He doesn't ask much of the audience.
Okay, but play with me.
Except to love him.
The worst sign in New England sports is you.
Mass. The quiet half of Felger and Mass. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Okay, welcome back to the program. As promised, I got a giveaway for you. Core Golf. We'll get your golf game in order. It is the place to go. Caller 10 to the Pride Motor Group contest line, 617-931-0985. We'll score a $100 value card to Core Golf Natick this summer. Core Golf is a place to be. Core Golf is the only public facility in the Northeast with Trackman Range. It's that fancy tracking technology. It's like, get your swing path, launch angle, exit velocity, all those things are using in baseball, but they use it in golf.
It's the golf standard, too. It's like anything that's not TrackMan's crap.
There you have it.
It's used by the military.
Well, what more do you need to know?
Yeah. Seriously, to track like missile speed and all that kind of crap. I'm not joking.
Instead, we're going to be tracking your lousy 8-iron.
Yes.
Okay?
With my high draw.
It's the only public facility in the Northeast with TrackMan range. So swing by, try out their game-changing technology. They're open daily from 9 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. So visit our friends, 218 Speen Street. Don't let that confuse you. It's just right across from the Natick Mall, just about. 218 Speen Street in Natick. More information online at coregolf.com, K-O-H-R. Let's take a few quick calls here. Bob and Needham, what do you got? You're up next on the Patriots.
First off, after hearing Teddy and Padad, who's the number one projected overall pick at this point, the way they sound about the team?
They are dire, it's true.
Secondly, you guys, when McDaniels left to go to Denver, that would have been the time to implement this new offense. He could have hired Kyle Shanahan and had the greatest perfectionist of all time, Tom Brady, help implement it with the blocking schemes, because he would have been, Brady would have held everyone accountable. He could have hired Kyle Shanahan if he's been so fascinated with the system. But now he's going to stick it on a second-year quarterback with two buffoons, Laurel and Hardy, as his coaches. How is that possible?
Bob, I would not have changed the offense under Tom Brady. You know, that thing was kind of working. And there's no real reason to do it there. I don't think there's any reason to do it, period. And I don't think there's any reason to do it, period. And if your bozo coaches can't figure it out, then hire coaches who can coach your system. Why is that so complicated? Mac Jones was good in it. He was comfortable in it. I think Mac Jones is suited to a Tom Brady offense, where it's about him, you know, digesting what's in front of him and setting the protections and all that stuff. Is Mac Jones's greatest attribute is supposed to be his head. So let him use his head. They shouldn't change it at all. And now if there's some long-range reasons to do it, I guess there is, but that doesn't feel like Belichick either. Like, Belichick wants to do something just to get with everybody else? That doesn't sound like him. What happened to the iconoclast, the contrarian?
The innovator.
And Bill Belichick, exactly. Since when does he chase everybody else and what they're doing? Now, like, the whole thing is just so weirdly wrong, and it was from the start, especially with the guys that he has pulling the trigger. Just so oddly, strangely, horrific of an idea of what they're doing down
there. Yeah, it doesn't make sense. And again, the big one to me is the coaching staff. So if you were going to put in some sort of, you know, new offense, how you don't bring in someone who is schooled in that offense to me is just blows me away. I mean, that's as basic as it gets.
We led off the show today talking about the Bruins re-signing Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci. G is in Boston. He wants to talk about that. Go ahead, G.
Hey, so I just wanted to say I'm definitely happy that they signed those guys. I think it is going to be an upgrade from last year, you know, on the second line. And I begrudgingly want to give Don Sweeney some credit. I mean, I'm looking at it looks like it's a little bit out of date, but, you know, at let's say Krejci, if he makes all of his bonuses, you know, he's going to be paid like somewhere between 90 and 100 of the top centers in the NHL. I mean, that's, you know, begrudgingly, I'm saying that Don Sweeney did a pretty good job signing that. I think he got Krejci for a steal, and I also think you got Bergeron for a steal. I wonder what you guys think.
I don't know about steal. Krejci's a good price, sure, $3 million. Bergeron isn't quite a steal, but I just think he's lucky those guys like it here. You know, or they're comfortable here. Their families are comfortable here. I mean, the Bruins are still a place that most guys want to play. Play for, and, you know, Boston is a place, and the Bruins are a team that most guys want to play for. So Sweeney's lucky like that. And maybe, you know, ditching Bruce Cassidy helped that regard, because Bruce Cassidy was obviously not popular among the players. But I don't know how much credit I want to give Sweeney for that. The fact that he has to bring back a 36, 37, you know, going on 38-year-old guy to fill out the top of his depth chart is kind of scary.
It is. It's sad is what it is.
I mean, so like,
desperate.
I don't know how much credit we're giving Don Sweeney that he had to bring back these guys. David Krejci played against goat farmers last year in the Czech Republic. Like,
he lit him up, though.
Yeah. Because the guys are coming off the freaking tractor. It's like, I would think that Krejci would. What's he going to look like? I think Krejci helps the power play. Like, that's what I think his value should be, because he can still play the half wall in on a power play situation, right? Like, I think he's still probably got that. Up and down the ice, I don't know. Their center depth chart, though, is interesting. I mean, they're full. I was going to say stacked, but that would give you the wrong impression. Like, that means they're really good.
Yeah, no, there's a clear order to it.
But they're full, though. Bergeron, Krejci, Coyle, Zacha.
Zacha, correct.
You know?
So what does that say about Stanika then?
Right. So I thought the whole point was to get these kids on the ice and get them time and blah, blah, blah. And Stanika's a natural center. What happened to that? So, look, I mean, I think they had very little choice because they can't go to the bottom of the league. And this is where they are. So you might as well be as good as you can be. And this is what they did.
Their centers aren't going to completely suck.
They're not. All right, to wrap up the show, I want to do a little something here because this family is very important to us, very, very important to Boston. And if you've listened to the program over the years, you know our work with the late, great Jake Kennedy and Christmas in the City. We have his son, Zach Kennedy, on the horn on our Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline because it's been a while since we've talked about Christmas in the City or the Kennedy family, and we want to get updated on what they're doing and give them a couple of plugs. So Zach is joining us now. Zach, how you doing, kid?
Hey, how are you? Great to be on the show.
We are great. How are you? So tell us, what should we know? Let's start with the Jake Kennedy ALS research and the Jake Kennedy ALS Fund. Let's hear about that first, Zach, because you're on the front lines of that.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. So, yeah, as you know, my dad, Jake Kennedy, he was the head of Christmas in the City, helping Boston's homeless for over 34 years. He passed away of ALS about 2 years ago. And before he died, he vowed to raise $1 million for ALS research. I happen to be an ALS researcher at the UMass Chan Medical School out in Worcester, Mass. And so, you know, we are so close to finding meaningful treatments for ALS. And we desperately need, you know, as much funding as we can. So, you know, the Jake Kennedy ALS Fund was set up by my dad, and we hope to raise $1 million for ALS research.
So tell me how we can donate. If just simply Googling Jake Kennedy ALS Fund pretty much gets you there, right?
That's right. JakeKennedyALSFund.org. And so for this fund, all proceeds go to research right here in Massachusetts at the UMass Chan Medical School.
Zach, how are we doing on that research? What breakthroughs have we made?
Oh, man. We are so tantalizingly close. You know, for the first time ever, we have real promising treatments in the fields of gene therapy. And they are very close to being ready for patients. You know, we have more drugs now in clinical trials for ALS than in any other point in history. And, you know, we have so many shots on goal, and, you know, we're just hoping one of them will be effective. And hopefully soon we'll start to see treatments, you know, available for people suffering.
So, Zach, I already know the answer to this, I think, but for the benefit of our listeners, because your dad was not the only member of your family that was stricken by ALS, right? I mean, I know your family has had tests done and whatnot to determine, you know, which family members were carriers. Like, I know that I believe your dad knew that that was coming. But the point is, did you get into ALS research because of all that? I'm assuming you did.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. When I was young, long before my father was diagnosed, my first uncle, Uncle Jimmy, he died when he was 31 of Lou Gehrig's disease or ALS. And about a year before that, my grandfather had died of Lou Gehrig's disease. So we always knew that this was in our family. And then in 2014, my other uncle, Rat, another amazing physical therapist, he was diagnosed with ALS. And I just want a quick shout out to Rat. He's doing great, but he's in the hospital right now. So thoughts and prayers with you, Rat. But yeah, so I was studying ALS long before my uncle Rat got sick or my dad got sick. And, you know, I guess, you know, for better or for worse, it was good to, you know, to know the disease as it happened.
So as part of the research, you're working on ways to, well, the gene therapy or getting in the way of those genes or marking it early and being able to get out ahead of it. Is that, I know I've butchered that description, but something along those lines, Zach?
Well, yeah, kind of. I mean, it's straight up sci-fi stuff over here. You know, we have these tools that can find these mutant genes, which some people have, which cause ALS in certain patients. And we have these incredibly, incredibly powerful ways to very specifically and potently shut them down. It's insane. And so now the goal is, you know, can we engineer these to be potent and durable enough to actually and safe enough to actually work in patients over a long, long time. So that's okay. Where we're at now. And it's real nerdy stuff, but it's awesome.
All right, and you're working with the Dr. Robert Brown at UMass, and you guys are getting after it. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. We're working with Dr. Brown. He's a world leader in ALS research. And, really, at Worcester and UMass, this is a world-leading institution in ALS research. So it's really exciting to be able to find a cure in our hometown.
Okay, Zach, so you're raising money through the Jake Kennedy ALS Fund. Your goal was $1 million. Where are we at right now?
I'm proud to say we are, as of 2 months ago, we are at $500,000. So it's amazing. So I can't thank all the people enough who have donated. And, we're going to keep doing it till we reach our goal. And, it's just to say, it's not just the Jake Kennedy ALS Fund. There are thousands or hundreds of really good charities all through Massachusetts. I want to shout out my uncle's Angel Fund, and I want to shout out another charity of which I'm raising money for, running for the Falmouth Road Race, ALS1, which is another great organization that gives money not just to research but to patient care as well. So we need all hands on deck to defeat this disease. And thankfully in Massachusetts, there are just so many dedicated people doing everything they can to take this down.
Okay, Zach, the Jake Kennedy ALS Fund, that's the one I'll just leave people with today. Jake Kennedy ALS Fund.org. Just Google it. It'll come out. It'll come up for you. Make a donation. It is our most insidious disease. I've said that many times. I mean, and that's not to diminish anything else that's going on out there, but I think we all know the toll that ALS takes on everybody. Zach, thanks so much for taking the time. I know we're back with full steam ahead with Christmas in the City this year, coming up this winter, so we'll get you back on later on in the fall and get some words on that. And anytime you need to plug anything on the ALS Fund, you let us know, okay?
Oh, well, thank you very much. Much appreciated. Can't wait. And anytime you need scorching hot sports takes, you let me know, okay? You give me a ring.
Okay. All right, Zach.
Zach, best of luck.
We appreciate it. Thanks, man.
All right. Thank you, guys. Take care.
Bye-bye. Zach Kennedy there, carrying on the amazing charitable legacy of his family and his father, Jake Kennedy. On that note, we'll take a break and come back with the final word.
Boston's home for sports.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Felger's expert analysis.
Not from this talk radio crazy.
Maz's hard-hitting questions.
What am I, like the freaking abrasive police here?
The caller's bringing knowledge to the table.
Maz, the adults are talking.
It's time to recap this four-hour show in 4 minutes. It's the final word on Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Excuse me. Final word brought to you by Town Fair Tire. If you're looking for the best deal on tires, there's only one place to go. Town Fair Tire. The best prices and great free services. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire.
Nobody.
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 Just a quick little hit on this because, we're up against it. But, we had fun at the expense of the Red Sox and their horrible weekend in Kansas City with the Lord Royals parody. Here's you guys singing along to it.
Love it.
Center fielder is a putz.
Pewter.
Heim Bloom, Heim Bloom, Heim Bloom.
I forgot.
Blow. Almost swept by the Royals. Royals.
And now it's stuck in your head.
Ah, okay.
It was simple.
All right, here comes the baseball hour. Maz, what do we got? More of that, hopefully.
Well, who are we going to blame and why? That's what comes down to it. The inconsistency.
Yeah. I'm sorry, no. Yeah, yeah. I'm sorry, Jimmy. Who are we going to blame?
Heim Bloom, Heim Bloom, Heim Bloom.
Exactly. So the debacle that was the Royals series over the weekend, and we come back to the – get ready for a lot of this down the stretch. Where is this going? Where is it going? Prominent voices in the Red Sox organization now asking the same question.
Ooh, okay, here comes Maz. Got some juice. We're back at it tomorrow at 2 o'clock. We'll talk to y'all then, guys.
See Bye. Ya.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.